America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
People overreact.
I wasn't overreacting. I was bummed, man. I was bummed.
Andy,
I watched
the king of overreacting. What are you talking about?
Please. I don't overreact.
You know what? It's impossible to overreact over the 1-4 start of the Browns. You cannot overreact to it because it's just awful. You ready?
Yeah, I'm totally confused. How can you not overreact to this?
Because as
Jeff,
as,
I'm looking at no, 12 Ian, phone stop, lines stop. Of people who are overreacting to this.
Yes. Stop. They're not overreacting. They're reacting appropriately.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. You can't overreact to this because they've been god-awful. What do these numbers mean to you?
Okay.
13,
yep.
15, 16, 17, 18.
That means they haven't scored 14 points in one of these games.
That is correct.
Thank you. That was a very Phelpsian answer,
that's
by the way.
That's a magnifying glass half full. Right,
that
there.
Is
the
some
Browns
Phelpsian.
Have not scored more than 18 points in a game, folks. They have not scored more than 18 points in a game. They are the, you ready? Third lowest scoring team in the NFL.
There are two teams worse than
yes.
us? Yes. Wow.
Yes, there actually are.
Oh, we got that going for us.
How bad do you think
nice.
The Patriots and the Panthers are? Browns are averaging 15.8 points per game. No team is gaining fewer yards than the Browns. They are dead last at 239.4 yards per game. Dead last. So you cannot overreact to how bad the Browns have been on offense. It's impossible to overreact because any reaction to how bad they've played offensively is appropriate today.
I concur.
It's flat out appropriate. Now, we're not going to do what we did last week.
What did we do last week?
We're not going to be here with how to fix it.
Oh, we're not?
No. But we're going to throw out ideas, but we're not going to try and fix it. You know why? That's on them. I will tell you this. If you roll out, and it might be a fix that we don't see or that we're not told about, but if you roll out the same thing that you have rolled out so far through the first five games, well, shame on you. Shame on you. Can Kevin Stefanski call plays? Dang right he can. Did you like the 11 wins last year? Did you like the plays that were called when Joe Flacco was a quarterback? Did you like the plays that were called when Deshaun was 4-1 as a starter last year? Kevin called those. So he can call plays. You have a new offensive coordinator. How's that working out? Is it his fault? I don't know. You have a new offensive line coach. Is it his fault? I don't know. You have injuries on the offensive line. Is that the reason for this big mess? I don't know. What I do know is other teams have offensive line trouble, Andy, and they seem to figure out a way to still move the football and score points. This team hasn't done that. Is it the wide receiver's fault?
I don't know, man. They dropped a touchdown yesterday. That was not fun.
Cedric Tillman hitting the numbers on a critical play.
Yeah.
Amari Cooper hitting the numbers. Boom, interception leads to a touchdown last week. Jerry Jeudy in the end zone. You've made him, what, the 22nd, 21st, whatever it is, highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. Drops a touchdown pass. I will say this. Before the start of the season, I talked about the lack of skill position talent on this team, despite the fact that people think there was skill position talent. It's overrated.
Dan Menigan, 92, The Fan. Are you really taking a victory lap right now?
No, I'm just saying. This team didn't have enough skill position talent.
Can I see your credential, please?
There's no victory lap. I mean, if it was obvious to me, why wasn't it obvious to the front office?
It's just a really hard pill to swallow. I really struggled watching that game yesterday. It felt like 99 Browns. That's what it felt like to me, especially watching that offense in the first half. Man, what they have, six first downs in the first? They were 0 for 12 on third down to start the game. 0 for 12. Would they end up 1 for 13 when it was all said and done? 0 for 12? And it wasn't like they were all like third down and 8. There were a couple third down and 5s in there, a couple third down and 3s.
Yeah.
They were 2 for 3 on fourth down.
And Andy, as bad as the stats were, and they were awful by the end of the game, you just pointed something out that's really significant. They were padded by what happened late in the game.
Yes.
It was just atrocious when the game was still mildly not in doubt. It was just atrocious. Folks, the offense is in shambles. They cannot roll it out again next week and expect it to change. I don't know what you do. Do you emphasize certain players? Do you want to see more of Cedric Tillman? Do you want to see more of Pierre Strong? Do you want to see changes on the offensive line? Do you want to see a change at quarterback? Do you want to see a change at play caller? Do you want a new offensive coordinator? There are all kinds of things that you can say here, Andy, because I don't think anything is off the table right now because the offense has been that bad.
Jeff, let me dive right into this thing because it was a question yesterday in the press conference. Is he thinking about switching quarterbacks?
He said no.
He said no, emphatically said no yesterday.
That's correct.
So my question for you is,
the quarterback's been not good. He doesn't even have a 200-yard passing game this year. But is that on the quarterback? Partially sure it is. He's the guy with the ball. He's the guy making the decisions on the field. He's the guy who sometimes holds on to the ball too long.
Jeff, if they're not going to change the quarterback, I don't know how. But even if you just take him out for a game, right? Or let's see what happens if you take. There's a part of me that still wonders if he's hurt. Although he keeps getting back up, he's not going to tell you he's hurt. I don't know that the rest of the team is buying in. This team had a team meeting last week, guys. They had a team-only meeting, players-only meeting. And that's what we got on Sunday. That's after a players-only meeting? Oh, it might be one of the worst performances in the league all year. They looked pathetic yesterday. That's after a player-only meeting. So, to me,
tells you the value of meetings.
Well, it tells you the value of leadership within the locker room.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I've never been a big believer in, gosh, fellas, we're not playing well. Let's go play better. Okay.
That's not what it is.
Raw team.
You know there's psychological.
If you don't have the ability to play better, I don't care how often you meet. I don't care how rah-rah you want to get. If you don't have the ability, whether it's because of the players, the scheme, the injuries, whatever, I don't care how many times you meet.
Jeff, it takes zero talent to hustle, and there were plays out there yesterday. I was like, are these guys, they even care?
I never buy that either.
Talent to hustle?
No,
that's a fact.
That's a fact. What I don't get is that they're not hustling. Of course they're hustling. You don't hustle out there, you get your knees blown out. You get your shoulders beat up. You cannot not hustle on the National Football League field because will hurt you.
There's mental hustle too. How do you have 12 guys on the field deep in their territory? You got your you-know-what's handed to you.
Coaching?
In the first half.
Is that coaching? They said miscommunication.
Deshaun started walking over to the sidelines on that play.
With about 20 seconds on the play clock.
There were 12 guys on the field with 20 seconds left. Hey, Deshaun, yell at somebody to get off the
field.
Get
off the field. Sprint off the field.
What is that?
Stefanski was not very happy.
What is that?
Yeah, if you've looked at that play on replay, and you should, Deshaun, it was about 20 seconds on the play clock when he kind of left the huddle and started walking over.
And there were 12 guys on the field.
I counted them. There were 12 guys.
Yeah.
And Amari Cooper, you can see, turns and puts his hands up as Deshaun's walking away. Now, he said later, from what I read, yeah, there was a miscommunication. We had 12 guys on the field. So was that the throwing up your arms in disgust because there was miscommunication or because your quarterback's walking off the field? I don't know what it was. You could have called another timeout there, but if you're trying to make
timeout.
If you're trying to get back in the game, you probably want the timeout. It was terrible.
That's peewee football stuff, Jeff.
Except was it coaching or was it, you know, is it your quarterback? Should I
both.
I don't
it's both.
I agree.
Yeah.
Except at that point, which guy you're sending off the field. You know, is Deshaun going to quickly look around and say, wait a minute, you're the guy who's not supposed to be here, get out. If he does, with 20 seconds and you have a chance to run that play still, I think that's really pushing it.
Help me with this one too, guys, and I can look it up real quick. I can't remember, when do they cut off the communication to the helmet? It's like 10 seconds?
Like, isn't it like 7 or something
like
that?
Is it 7 or 10? I know it's later than that. So why is Kevin not screaming, get back on the field?
Maybe he was. If you saw Kevin's face, and I know you did.
He said go for three. Isn't that what Deshaun said, go for three?
Kevin didn't.
Kick the field goal?
Kevin didn't look real pleased.
It's 15 seconds? So that means that he had another 5 seconds to say, stay on the field, kick the running back off the field. Who cares at that point?
I don't know. Folks, we want your thoughts. 216-474-0092. It's a Browns Therapy Monday. We're not the ones who need the therapy. Therapy is needed by the offense and the defense that is no longer stellar, but is okay. But okay is probably not enough with the way this offense is working.
Brian, welcome to a Browns Therapy Friday.
Get it going,
Therapy
Brian.
Monday.
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
What's up? How
Just
are you?
Just wonderfully well, Brian.
Well, you know, man, I don't know we're here again, right? So how good can it be? But I don't know, man. I only got a couple seconds. Y'all really know how to drag out a call.
Well, you're doing a good job of dragging out this call.
You've
Keep
been
going.
On for about 30 seconds. It's cooking. Yeah. Way to go, Brian.
Listen, man, listen. We a bad organization, bro. And we being exposed. I mean, to me, number one defense last year, right? Deshaun Watson, good player a couple years ago, played good, had a little flashes last year. Number one offense line, and now they can't even figure it out. Bro, this is a bad organization. There's nothing that nobody can do to fix it. They firing running back coaches last year. That was the only bright spot that we had on the offensively on the team. It's just whenever you got chaos, look, don't be surprised when chaos starts to spread like an infectious disease. And that's exactly what this is. We in the AFC North, and we cannot afford to have this kind of bad leadership, because when you do, you see it, and that's exactly what we're seeing. You can't fix it. You have to literally tear it up inside the organization, rebuild it, get something, stop having people throw all their opinions out. Because you can see it's like transitioning. This guy must think he right. This guy. You need all those people swinging in the same direction, and it's not happening, and this is what you're seeing out on the field.
Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you. Transcripts of Brian's phone call are available at 923thefan.com.
Our buddy Tom, TK, sends me this. He said this, how bad is Andrew Berry? The only offensive starter on this team that Berry drafted in 5 drafts is Jedrick Wills.
Is there a law that says you have to draft your offensive line?
That's interesting. Think about that. Cool Ray's in Bedford. Cool
Ray.
Oh,
here we go. Cool Ray in Bedford.
Here we go, fellas. Man, can we listen? Whoa, I'm not even mad no more. I'm not mad, because I saw this one coming.
Cool Ray, do me a favor. Take it off speakerphone.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
I'm not even mad anymore. I used to be mad because, you know, I know the problem is the coach, right? We see it. And now it's organizational. Like, this is such a debacle. We saw it a couple years ago when Baker was here and he wanted the players to be the leaders of the team, Miles Garrett, stuff like that. And last year we gave him credit, and the league gave him credit for the defense winning 8 games for us. This year,
you don't think Flacco helped a little?
Okay, so with the Flacco thing, let me say this: I've never liked the Flacco, maybe because he played for a different team. But sure. At that point, but I give all veterans who've been in the league a long time discredit. You've seen multiple defenses. Oh, you know credit.
Okay.
You've seen defenses. You know how to prepare. You're a professional. You wouldn't have been there. So Flacco not practicing and Flacco not having to go to training camp and coming in when he did. And by him being a veteran, I'm not going to knock him on that. But at the end of the day, his numbers was his numbers, which he threw more interception than anybody in the league in a short time he was there. My problem what we have in here is what we saw yesterday. Yesterday is such a debacle because my team has an offensive coordinator who doesn't do a job. The coach does the offensive coordinator job. You have this dysfunction because This team, once again, doesn't look ready. I'm so tired of the injury excuse. Every team has injuries. That's why you a coach. You make sure your backups can come in and do a serviceable job until your starters get ready if they can come back sooner. If you're waiting for Chubb to come back to make something happen, you're still 3 more weeks away, which is 3 more losses away. So you're so
And Cool Ray, it's hard to bank on a guy coming off a second big knee injury thinking he's going to walk in the door and be 120 yards a game.
He's back.
And to be fair, Deshaun Watson, it's some of his fault. But I want you guys to go do this on your own time, and I know you guys will. I want you to watch the routes of the receivers. Every single play that Deshaun Watson got sacked, look at the routes. They ran a route and stopped. They literally didn't even try to fight to get open. They just ran and stopped, ran and stopped. And it was, and then you, then when you know that the offensive line is leaking, your most of the routes that he was trying to throw to, they were deep routes where you wouldn't even have the time to throw it anyway.
Cool, Ray. Thank you, buddy. I want you to think about this. I've screamed out wide receiver forever. Okay, I'm going to scream about it right now. I think Amari Cooper is a really good pro, and Amari can play on my team any day. He's not absolute upper echelon NFL wide receiver. And that was the case even when they brought him in. His career is terrific. He's a really good wide receiver. But he's not, you know, CeeDee Lamb. He's not Jamar Chase, okay? And probably never was. Your other big acquisitions have been third-round draft choices who haven't hit, and a guy who didn't work out in New York, who they moved on from, Elijah Moore, mm-hmm. and a guy who didn't work out in Denver, Jerry Jeudy, who they moved on from.
Okay.
So you had two reclamation projects that you brought in who you made starters. That's tough to do. Steve is in Lyndhurst. Hello, Steven.
All right, let's go with facts, what we do know.
Okay.
This stuff started in a playoff game against the Texans last year when Joe Flacco was throwing those pick sixes because they started to blitz the Browns offense. Kevin Stefanski play calling. Joe Flacco looked terrible in that game and in the second half, late in the second half. And everybody was like, he's a bum, he's a scrub. It just transferred over into this year. Let's go with what we
Wait,
do
who was a bum? Just for clarification, who did you think was a bum? Was it Flacco or Stefanski?
Well, Flacco threw those pick six in the playoff game against the Texans late.
Okay, you're talking
game.
Flacco. I just follow along. Okay, yeah. Go ahead, Steven. Sorry.
It's only because they brought heat on him.
Right.
So what the MO on the Browns is that Kevin Stefanski cannot call a good game against the Blitz. Now, everybody know against the blitz, it's a three-step drop, screen plays, and go to your tight end. Chip at the line, turn around, get the ball out of your hand. He's not doing that. The guy just got off the line with you. Kevin Stefanski is calling plays that have to develop. Deshaun Watson don't have enough time for that. But let's talk about Deshaun Watson because this is the elephant in the room. This is the real story. What do we know about Deshaun Watson? He won championships on the high school level. He won a championship in Clemson, mm-hmm. first 3 years in the league. He was a Pro Bowler, led the league with touchdowns and yards passing.
And was was really good. He was really good in Houston.
No. He wasn't good. He was great. That's why Kevin Stefanski said what he said about Deshaun Watson. Because he understands one thing. Haslam knows football. Haslam is nobody's dummy. Haslam knows that Deshaun Watson is an elite quarterback. The question is, is the right coach in place to coach him? That's the number one question. And we can answer that question because you can take Deshaun Watson.
Steven,
out of
do you just real me, quick, do you think Deshaun is an elite quarterback right now?
Absolutely. Ain't no doubt about it. He's one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league. I tell you what, take Deshaun Watson out of the equation, put Jameis Winston back there, and you'll go probably, 1-14?
Deshaun got taken out of the equation last year, and Joe Flacco, regardless of as many interceptions as he threw, was throwing for 300 every game. Same line.
Let me explain this to you.
Okay.
Flacco and Watson had basically the same record as starting quarterback.
Just give me an opportunity to rebuttal that.
Sure, go.
It happened in the Texans game in the playoffs.
Okay.
When they figured out how you slow down Joe Flacco and the Browns offense, blitz. And they start doing it, and they never stop doing it. They're doing it to the day right now. Kevin Stefanski cannot call a good game against the blitz. That's the bottom line. Because everybody know against the blitz, what do? You go to your tight ends. You go with screen plays to offset that pressure coming up the middle from the ends. He won't do it because he is – you can sit here and say that I'm biased towards Kevin Stefanski, which I'm not. Deshaun Watson is not the problem. It's the head coach.
I don't know, Steve, man. I got to be honest with you. I'm super bothered by that play in the first half when he walked off the field with 20 seconds. I just – I don't get it. I don't understand that play. And you saw it. And again, I don't think this is all on Deshaun. I don't think it's all on everybody. They should all be pointing fingers. But
I'm sure we'll
I can't sit here and tell you that Deshaun Watson's the same quarterback he was when he was in Houston.
The guy that took a team
that was 0-3 to start the season and make it to the playoffs. That's the guy I want. Is he still there?
He doesn't look like it to me.
No.
Can he be there? We'll find out. Guardians, Tigers. Guardians can take control in a 5-game series. They took control in game one, 7-0, 5 in the first inning against a bullpen game for the Tigers. If you were watching it on TV, you heard this man call the action. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. He's the play-by-play man. Does a great job on everything he does. And he's Brian Anderson.
It's the other Brian Anderson. The other one we really like.
Hello, BA.
The other one. We got a lot. We got to get that straight.
Well, the other BA.
There's a few of us.
Yeah. As long as you guys are getting the right checks, that's okay. Although BA's down in Tampa, so he's got to make sure he's got his house cleared out today. But we're praying for all those people with the bad weather down there. But
yeah,
great job calling the game the other day. I thought you're fantastic. Absolutely. Energy first inning, outstanding.
With Jeff Francoeur on TBS, and you can watch it again today coming up 4:00. First inning, what a disaster! If you're AJ Hinch and you're thinking I'm going to go bullpen game and I don't even get an out, now what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think Frenchie said it best. Couldn't have started worse, and then it got worse immediately. But, that's the whole piece to the Stephen Vogt Guardians puzzle, is to try to disrupt those organized, the organized chaos that A.J. Hinch is going to unleash. And now Stephen Vogt's kind of in that mode. I mean, I know Matthew Boyd's making the start, and he pitched beautifully for the Guards in his 8 starts, but he's a bit of a hired hand here, and I'm sure the lease is going to be very short, 3-4 innings, I would imagine. Third time through is always a marker, so I think now the tables will be a little bit turned because Scooble is one of those guys you can kind of let ride a little bit, and it's a bit of a reset. So yeah, it was a great start for Cleveland. Whatever questions there were about, the timing and rhythm of their offense, I was concerned about it because I do this every year, and it's a major factor. It's a major story with managers every season about what to do for those who get the bye. I mean, Brian Snitker just wrestled with it and did a complete 180 from 2 years ago to what he did last year. Neither one of them worked. Dave Roberts, they got swept last year by Arizona when they had the layoff. So to come out and drop a 5 spot in the first inning, really before there was an out, what a monumental achievement that was for a team that hasn't seen live pitching in a week.
Hmm. Hey, what'd you think of the energy in that? It was jumping through the screen if you were watching at home, and the ballpark was really, really rocking. I'm just curious. I love hearing it from people who aren't from Cleveland, just to kind of get your take on what the ballpark was like and the energy, and really, truly taking advantage of home field advantage.
It was just like I thought it'd be, and just like I remembered when I called playoff games here a decade ago. It's just, it's hopping. It's awesome. And it starts early. You can just hear music pouring out of different corners of downtown that are kind of, where we sit up top. It's a great scene as you look over the left field wall, and, you can kind of see the crowd building up outside the ballpark, and it was great. I mean, it's such a, Midwest baseball fans. I live and work in Milwaukee, so I'm partial to it. Get a bad rap, but in the Midwest, we make you earn our money. if we're going to pay for tickets and if we're going to come out, you got to earn it as a team. That means we're going to have days and years when the ballparks aren't full every day. But when you're winning and you're playing well and you're worth spending our money for, we're going to show up, and that's what Midwesterners do, and it's a beautiful scene. And man, I'm glad you said it came across that way. We're always trying to find that balance between making sure the crowd is heard versus us being heard. but we have a great audio team who spends a lot of time laying out these microphones to make sure that is picked up and you can feel that at home. So yeah. Thank you for saying that. And I thought it was a glorious scene, and it'll be the same in Detroit. in a couple of days too. All playoff venues are pretty great this time of year.
Brian Anderson joining us. You'll hear him on TBS today. Play-by-play, Guardians game two against the Tigers with Jeff Francoeur. The offense struck early the other day and then didn't strike much the rest of the game. Is offense still a concern for the Guardians in this series, in your mind?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's fair. It's totally fair, and it needs to be. I mean, their overall OPS was not great in the second half. It's just kind of a, you know, middle-of-the-pack offense that is made a lot better, and I mean this in a way of confidence for a hitter, knowing your bullpen is so great that you're always in games and you're not going to have to go score four or five runs, you know, in the back half of a game to be in a game. Guardians led the American League in comeback wins for a reason. That is a direct correlation to their bullpen and a little bit of freedom that bullpen gives their offense. So the one interesting note, and Tarek Skubal is a little different because he's, you know, he's the elite guy. He's the alpha dog in the American League and is going to win the Cy Young. But the Guardians have the best OPS against left-handed starters. And that will bode well, and I think that applies to left-handed pitching in general. And they're going to see some matchup lefties come in as well. So they're better against lefties. And so I don't know if that's going to apply against Tarek Skubal. But, you know, they had 10 hits against Tarek Skubal in his only start against him. They didn't score many runs, but they did put some hits together. And if they can flip this game, then, you know, a sweep is a real possibility, even going back to Detroit. Now you start, it's so much pressure on the Tigers if you can flip this game. The Tigers, I'm not saying they punted game one, but when it got to be 5-0, you're starting to see A.J. Hinch roll out pitchers to make sure they have postseason experience for later in the series. Again, he's hoping they get outs, and the Guardians did add on. But, yeah, I think both offenses are challenged. Pitching is going to reign supreme. Ultimately, the bullpens are going to decide the series. Cleveland has the best bullpen in the game. So I like Cleveland's chances here.
Last thing, you err on the side, if you're Stephen Vogt, of taking your starter out, no matter who the starter is, too soon rather than too late based on your bullpen?
Yeah, always. I mean, with this bullpen, for sure. And, you know, there is a discussion. Like, I have a lot of conversations through the years when we worked together, but even now with John Smoltz, Jeff Francoeur, Ron Darling, all these guys that I know and I've worked with, and you heard a little bit from Derek Jeter last night. Pedro Martinez talks about it on our broadcast. There is a little bit of a notion that overexposure to a bullpen can be a concern. And I brought this up in the broadcast in game one, because in Stephen Vogt's case, I don't think he's so much worried about overexposure of the pen. You know, we talk about starters not allowing hitters to see them a third time. The same can kind of apply to relievers, but that would show itself, manifest itself over a series. I thought last year we covered the National League and we did Diamondbacks Phillies. And I thought the Phillies ran their bullpen out too much. And by the end of that series, really the middle to the end, the Diamondbacks, they had a great look at all of their best relievers. And the Phillies had a great bullpen last year. And they ended up flipping that series. You know, they won three of the last four games in that series to advance to the World Series. So I thought that was a real story last year. I don't think that's the case with the Guardians. And judging by Stephen Vogt's comments, it's almost like I said on the air, I think he wants to show his hand almost in a way to demoralize the opponent. Because, I mean, if you're facing Cade Smith and Class A and Gattis, I mean, you're looking at this situation going, I'm not sure how we do this, especially when you are playing twilight games like we're going to have tonight. I'm sure everybody, all the hitters are hoping for this cloud cover to remain in Cleveland. But
yeah,
if it's sunny and the shadows are a factor, good luck. I mean, it's a pitching game. And that does answer your question about the Guardians offense from Saturday. I thought the conditions were really tough to hit. Bright, sunny day, really harsh shadows. I thought for both teams, that's why Cleveland jumping on a 5-run first. You know, it kind of felt like it was game over at that point.
Brian, we know you're busy today. Thank you for your time. We'll get you back on, we hope, down the road when we can just like bust chops like crazy.
Yeah, we need a national TV game with both Brian Andersons. That would make us happier.
I'm ready. But Eddie was just texting me. I said, you can call the middle three innings if you want. So whatever. We welcome all comers. I told Tom Hamilton he can come over if he wants. Everybody's welcome on TV.
Let's get him in the Hall of Fame. He's up for the Hall of Fame.
There
again,
you go.
Too, for Cooperstown.
I don't care if he's in or not. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yes, he is.
He's a Hall of Famer. No matter. He's a Hall of Fame person and just one of my favorite people in the world. And, of course, he's a cheeser.
That's
me,
true.
So we love the guy.
Brian, thanks, buddy. We appreciate your time today.
Great to be with you again.
Thank you.
You can hear him on TBS today with Jeff Francoeur, game 2, 4-0, 8, whatever it is, starting right around 4 o'clock as the Guardians with a chance to take control of the series. Can they get to the bullpen with a lead or a close game? Because if they can, a 2-0 lead in a best-of-five series. Jeff Phelps, Andy Baskin.
I think they can. I was just looking through the numbers of him historically and through the last year. And, you know, yeah, he's got the last two wins in his last two starts against the Guardians. But, I mean, there's a history there that says, hey, maybe they can get to him. You know, especially, you know, a couple no decisions. You know, at first two times that the Guardians faced him, although it was back in 21, you know, they beat him there. So I'm just looking at the 8 career outings he has against this franchise. Who knows, man? It's playoffs, you know, and I love the fact they won the first game because even if he is the true Cy Young Award winner that no one can beat, you still have an opportunity to win the series without beating him. So that I think that's why game one was so important. It was gigantic.
The one thing I think about this game with Skubal, a couple of things really stand out. Though the Guardians were able to get 10 hits off him when they saw him earlier this year, opponents are hitting 201 against him. So he's been very difficult to hit. And to me, this is a key stat. He's second in the majors this year, tied for second with 22 quality starts. And that means you go 6 innings and give up 3 or fewer runs. That to me means, okay, you're going to be hard pressed to score runs against this guy. If you want to be in this game, and I think Stephen Vogt can, I think he will, manage, like, you know, it's a one-run game late, and they're going to try and manufacture runs at all costs. Now, to me, that doesn't mean you're having Jose Ramirez bunt, Andy, but you're going to bunt a guy over today? Yeah, I think you are. You know, you're going to do everything you can to try and manufacture, move a guy over, you know, hit the ball the other way. I think you're going to do everything you can to get anything on the board against Skubal.
I think that when you go back and look at game one, and it doesn't matter who the pitcher is, the approach they had at the plate just for the first couple batters. So, you know, Kwan leads off the game with a double. Okay, that was 2 pitches. But then Fry ends up walking in the 2-hole. He took 8 pitches. And then Ramirez came back and took 7. So, I mean, you're 15 pitches in on 17 pitches total, but 15 pitches in on your first two batter or second and third batter, right? So 8 and 7, man, you have those 7, 8 pitch at bats. Those are going to help, especially when you go up against a guy like him.
One concern here, and I think it's only one concern. Matthew Boyd, former Tiger, of course, came back and was really effective for this team and very, very solid. And his last several starts, maybe not as solid as you'd want them to be. Hasn't gotten out of the 5th inning in the last 3 starts. Now, in this situation, you don't need him to get out of the 5th.
3-4, baby. That's it.
Yeah, but he didn't get out of the 5th inning and gave up runs in the process. And that's kind of rough. And so we'll see. I think he's got to be better than he was. Last start of the year, he went 4, gave up 2 earned against the Cardinals. Before that, went 2 2/3, gave up 3 earned, or 3 total, 2 earned against the Twins. And in the start before that, went 4 1/3 and gave up 4 runs, 1 earned on 6 hits against your beloved Chicago White Sox.
Oh, I love them. They're my favorite team. You know that.
I know.
But Grady's not getting the job. No, I don't love them anymore.
I agree. Larry's in Cleveland. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, I'd like to say, man, I'm glad the Guardians, man, is playing excellent. They got high tempo. He's got high energy. He's positive, man, and they're all away, man.
You talk about Larry. We love what you're listen, Larry, we love what you're saying. Take it off speakerphone, please.
All right. Hold on.
There you go. Now we can hear you.
Order a cheeseburger while you're there.
All right.
All right, Larry, sorry.
All right, we gave it a shot.
That was a mess.
Folks, if you hit the air, take it off speakerphone. We'll give you a second. Just go, oh, got to switch it over. But not if you're driving. So
we want you to be safe while you're driving.
Yeah.
So, you know, but, you know, if you're going to order lunch, do it before or after your phone call with
us.
Well,
they don't, in fairness to them, they don't know when you're going to pick up the phone, when you're going to
answer. I know, but if you're on hold, you know, be careful.
It's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the way to be?
Oh, take a cheeseburger. Oh, let's talk some sports. A hamburger. You'll have nothing and like it. And then.
Who's the key guy today for the Guardians?
I think
against the top pitcher in the American League who happens to throw left-handed.
I just think it's approach. I don't know that. Are we talking offensively? Yep. Are you talking about? Yeah. Yep. Offensively, I mean, just go back as I was doing this before. Look how many, especially early on in the game, how many batters got to 6, 7, 8 pitches in their at-bats. I don't care who you're going up against. If you can just fall off a couple when you know they're striking, the longer you make them work, especially in a playoff game where your adrenaline is sky high and you slow down that at-bat and they get a little bit longer. And like, what was I saying? It's temperatures in the 60s, I think, today for tonight's game. So I think it's the approach at the plate. That's really what I think this whole thing is about. It's the way the Guardians approach every at bat when they hit step up, and that they're not in a big hurry. You can't be. You can't be. And if he's throwing them down the middle or he's throwing strikes, man, you got to follow them off. If they do that, they'll be okay. I mean, like you said, they had 10 hits against them last time. Just got to put them together the right way. So I think it's all about the approach at the plate.
Okay. Let me give you, and this is obvious, but I think it needs saying. Lane Thomas, mm-hmm. Good luck. You're a right-handed hitter, counting on you today. How about John Kenzie Noel? You know, takes one swing, Andy, and he's a guy who with one swing can change some things up. And I would assume that he will be in right field today, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So maybe this is an opportunity for John Kenzie, who's not been quite, you know, the hot hitter that he was before.
So he's got 2 at bats against him, and he has nothing. So no hits, no nothing. Our best hitter, well, Tyler Freeman, who's 3 for 6. I'm just looking at some career stats here. David Fry's got 8 hit against him. Jose has been outstanding, 8 for 21. A lot of guys with some real low numbers against him, though. Jimenez doesn't have a hit against him. Just looking at Kwan.
Well, the guy's been lights out. So
Noel, Rocchio, Thomas, those guys are all looking for their first hit against him.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. It's a playoff game.
So, right. And
hey, don't be scared to bunt.
And that's a little different beast, you know? And that's why I think Stephen Vogt will be managing this thing like absolute crazy and will be quick to make a move with Matthew Boyd. I think we'll be quick to play the small ball game and just try and manufacture anything he can get.
Yeah, Tyler Freeman's got good numbers against him, Jeff.
Well, is that one of the reasons he's on the playoff roster?
Could be. 3 for 6.
So what are you going to do with that?
Let him hit. He's your best hitter.
Where are you going? So you're going to put him in center field today?
I don't know.
On that?
No, but maybe you see him late in the game.
Maybe. And put Lane Thomas in right? Are you going to go that way?
That's possible. Yeah. When does the lineup come out? It's going to be soon, isn't it?
Good question. It's a darn good question, Andy.
I'm looking forward to this game.
Glad you asked.
We need this. You know, let me tell you this. It's the best thing that ever happened to the Browns. Guardians play today, game 2. Because you can quickly turn your attention to something else.
Well, we're going to have Scott Petrak from the Chronicle-Telegram join us at 11:40. Scott was nice enough to move because Brian Anderson was only available at 11
o'clock. Was it the Morning Journal or was it News Herald that had the headline today with the Browns picture that you showed us in the beginning of the show?
It was the
Morning Journal. And what did it say?
Had a picture of Jaden Daniels scoring a touchdown. A great big picture on the front page with the headline, Guardians play today.
What a great headline. What a great headline. That was awesome.
You don't think that was a mistake, huh?
No, I don't. I don't. Well played. Well played.
That was kind of well played, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's really true. Mike is in Stowe. Home of the Bulldogs. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
All right. if I was to tell you, Jeff, I'm really from Monroe Falls, what would you then have to say to, if I say home of the, what would you
Stone
say?
Stone Monroe Falls Bulldogs.
Yeah, you'd still be a Bulldog. Unless you went to Walsh or you went to TBCA.
I was a normal folk, put it that way. So, no, I did not. Hey, what I got is I like a couple of advantages I think we got going in. Number one, the weather's going to be partly cloudy instead of more likely more cloudy than sunny, which is going to really help with that shadow.
See, the forecast I just saw, it looked like almost full sun early on in the game. I hope it's wrong, but.
I think you're going to see little clouds move in. It looks to me like a break kind of thing. I don't think we're going to have it all the whole time. We got to hit wide foul, like you said, Andy. You're right. It's not going to be about watching them throw strikes, because if you do, you're going to be sitting on the bench.
Yep.
You foul them off. You got to make them make plays. And if you can somehow score early and get them doubting themselves again, because they were on such a high, they're such a young team, the best thing to do is just like we did the last game, get out there and get them quick. And they take the fight out of them and, get to that bullpen. If we do that, we'll be okay. Thanks, guys.
All right, Mike. Thank you very much. Mike from Stowe, home of the Stowe Monroe Falls Bulldogs.
Look at you, Cleveland Heights, University Heights, Southeast.
There it is.
Multi-city school districts, yes.
I think Brian Anderson said something.
Mid Park Berea. I don't want to leave you off.
I don't want to look too far down the road, but he said if they can get to Schuylkill today, sweep. And I agree with that. You know, if they're going to throw another bullpen game, sweep. I think it's interesting some of the roster decisions that the Guardians made. No Ben Lively. However, if they are able to advance, we'll see Ben, I would assume, in the next series in the ALCS.
I was listening to Hammy the other day just talking about how these guys.
Who's been hot. I was surprised that he's not on it, to be honest.
Hammy was talking about how those guys were locked in and engaged. Even though they didn't make the playoff roster, they were there. They were ready to. Well, they were very much a part of the team, whether you're able to play or not.
Which is good. Anthony's in Cleveland Heights. Anthony.
Heights, hey. Playing the game today, so I'm pretty excited.
There you go. Got about a minute, Anthony.
I'll get to it real quick. I was not a huge fan. I mean, I wouldn't say I wasn't a huge fan of Noel. He's got a high chase rate, but against left-handed pitchers, that guy mashes breaking balls. He's got a 1.273 slugging average against left-handed pitchers on their breaking stuff. So
Menigan's nodding his head.
I'm sorry?
Menigan's nodding his head in agreement, Anthony.
Yes. So, I mean, yes, this is the perfect spot for him. A little low in the – I like him lower in the batting order, to get some protection from Kwan, 7 or 8. And, yes, get a breaking pitch and hit it out of the park.
All right, Anthony, thank you very much. Can't wait to see what Stephen Vogt does. When we get the lineup, we'll give it to you. Get ready. Game 2 is coming up. So the man who covers the Browns for the Chronicle-Telegram, brownzone.com, where you can read his fine coverage of the team, joins us right now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Good morning, Scott.
Hey, Scott.
How are you guys doing?
We're okay. So let's get right to it. There have to be changes on the offense. Have to be. Will they be changes that are visible to folks like us and any Browns fan, or will they be something where we're changing personnel in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, right, Jeff? To me, there's three major moves you can make. One would be to change quarterbacks, which Kevin Stefanski said yesterday he's not going to do. One would be to fire offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey, just because, for whatever reason, the offense isn't working, and he's a key part of the changes they made in the offseason, or the last one would be for Kevin Stefanski to give up play calling. And I've never been an advocate of that. I think he does a good job. But if you're looking at 1-4 and as bad as it is, I think there needs to be one of those major changes. And, you know, it wouldn't stun me if Stefanski changed his mind and gave up the play calling, just because I feel like they need to do something. And personnel-wise, outside of quarterback, I just don't know what you could do.
Well, you could kind of feel the dysfunction on that first offensive drive after the turnover where they had the ball deep in Washington. I mean, I don't understand what happened on that play. Like, they forced themselves to kick a field goal. They couldn't burn another timeout. Deshaun's walking off the field with 20 seconds to go on the play clock because right. They have 12. Like, that's pure dysfunction.
There's no doubt. And, you know, like anything, there's a bunch of layers to it. There were too many guys on the field. There were 12 guys. They had one extra skill player. Now, that's not Watson's fault. And I don't think it's necessarily Stefanski's fault. I feel like that's, you know, he calls the play and then the assistant coaches take care of getting the right personnel packages in. And they have a bunch of new, I mean, new this year, it's week five, but they have a bunch of new assistants on offense. So I feel like there's a breakdown there. But then, you know, I think if you got Stefanski in an honest moment, he would say that Watson should have tried to figure out the situation. Send one of the guys off and run a play. It might not be perfect, but you need to go for it there on fourth down. And with 20 seconds left, I think they could have figured out a way to get to the line of scrimmage. And I don't think he likes seeing Deshaun Watson walking toward him. I just think that's a bad look, and I don't think it's Watson quitting or anything like that. I think Watson was frustrated, but in the moment, I think you need your quarterback to take charge there and figure it out.
Scott Petrak joining us. You'll hear Scott during Kevin's press conference coming up at 12:30. Watson clearly didn't play well and hasn't played well for most of this season, and the offensive line is clearly an issue. You could say wide receivers not holding on to the football is an issue, but how are other teams able to overcome injuries on the offensive line? This team hasn't as of yet, Scott. And it looks like you're going to be dealing with them for a while. So you better figure that aspect out so you can figure out other things in the offense, no?
Yes. No, you're 100% right. And it's not all Deshaun Watson's fault. He's getting hit too often. And when a quarterback gets hit too often, he becomes skittish, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. in the pocket and is trying to get out of there. And Watson talked after the game about, hey, I'm trying to get it out of my hand as soon as I can. But when you ask how you compensate for an offensive line that's struggling, it's with outstanding quarterback play. The quarterback knows exactly where to go with the ball. He knows exactly where the blitzes and the pressures are coming from and figures out a way to beat that. And I don't think Watson has done a good enough job in that area. And when there is time to throw, he isn't seeing the field well enough, or he runs into a sack, or he bails more quicker than he should because he's used to having to bail. There's plenty of moments yesterday where there's receivers open and Watson's moving when he doesn't have to move, or he's moving and not seeing them with his head up, whatever it is. So the answer to bad quarterback or bad line play is to have really good quarterback play, and the Browns are not getting that.
What do you think they're thinking in the front office today? It's hard not to think things are extremely horrible, but the reality of it is I don't know how many games it's going to take to win the AFC North because they're still in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be a frustrating part of it is if the Browns are only playing average and they'd won a couple of those games they could have won, Giants and Raiders, then they're right in the discussion. And, you know, Baltimore's not perfect. Cincinnati's certainly not perfect. We saw Pittsburgh last night, not perfect. So it's there for the taking, but nothing the Browns have done through five games makes it seem like they're going to be capable of taking it. So I think that's going through the front office's mind. I think they have to be questioning a lot of the roster moves they made. It's not all Deshaun Watson. It's not all coaching. And, you know, I know it's only two games, but this is just a small example. Zach Zinter, who they drafted in the third round, has not been good in two games. And, you know, maybe he'll be fine, and maybe 5 years from now he'll be a three-time Pro Bowler. But through two games, he has not been good, and that's one of your first draft picks this year, right? Your first draft pick is coming off suspension and hasn't been able to play at all. So there's plenty of areas from a roster and talent evaluation standpoint where the errors are showing up on game days.
Scott Petrak joining us, brownzone.com, where you can read all of his work. Nice piece out now by Scott. Five takeaways from another embarrassing defeat. You can go read that one at brownzone.com. If you're Kevin Stefanski and you've got to do something on offense here, what's your gut feel that is the maybe you can go back to this, maybe you can do this? Is there one thing that is sticking in your head, Scott, that you think this is the one thing that you definitely at least need to try?
Well, it might be more of a commitment to the run game and marry that with the play-action passing game. And, you know, Deshaun Watson brought it up after the game yesterday. He said these teams are playing too high shell, right, where they have the two deep safeties, and they're almost daring the Browns to run the ball. And they haven't run it well enough. And, you know, I'm sure part of that is because of the offensive line issues. I just don't think they're running it well when they try to run, but maybe you spend the week committing to, okay, this is going to be it. This we're going to do less shotgun, more under center. Go back to what Kevin Stefanski is more comfortable with.
Defensively, let me skip that. I'm going to come back to defense here in a second. They had a team only meeting. They had a players only meeting last week, right? How do you come out that bad after a players only meeting? What was accomplished in that meeting?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think Deshaun Watson was asked about it during the week and said, we meet all the time, you know, because he was asked specifically if there was a players only meeting. I thought the vibe was really good last week. I thought guys were committed to the preparation. Stefanski talked about doing more during the week so you can just be yourself on game day. And that was across the roster. I thought the locker room felt good. It didn't feel like 1-3. It felt positive. I picked the Commanders to win a close game, but I thought the Browns had a really good chance. I felt like that was almost a last stand type of thing, and they were going to come together, and they just didn't. So I don't think it's necessarily a preparation thing. I just think when they get to the game, there are so many issues that maybe just having a good week of practice, it's not enough to overcome all the problems that the Browns have right now.
Scott Petrak joining us. Scott, the defense was top-notch last year. Right now, it's kind of middle of the pack. I can't say it's playing poorly. I think we can say it's tackling poorly, though. Yeah. And the last two games against the run have been atrocious. What's going on?
Yeah, it's certainly not meeting expectations, and they got a lot of the same guys back. I thought they'd be even better than they were a year ago. Tackling's been a big issue. Martin Emerson Jr. has not been the same player he was his first 2 years, and that hurts when you play as much man-to-man coverage as the Browns play and you rely on your corners to lock guys down, and he just hasn't been nearly good enough. I think those are issues. I think offenses know where the weak spots are, and when your offense doesn't score, you never get a chance to go get the quarterback, and you're always kind of playing on your back foot, and the other offense can take chances and can try to run jet sweeps and things to keep you off balance defensively. But the bottom line is they're not good enough, and this team needs the defense to be dominant, and it just hasn't been. And I think, yesterday was such a blowout, but I thought the Giants and Raiders games were chances for the defense to really make a stand and play great and carry the offense to wins, and they weren't able to do it.
Scott, outside of injury or suspension, is there any way they go to Jameis Winston? I know he said no yesterday, but yeah. I keep trying to think of a scenario where he might just say, you know what, this is not working and we need to figure something out, or we need to correct something and maybe Deshaun needs to sit one out. I'm just trying to think of that scenario, especially based on hearing the question yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think if this happened two more games, then Kevin Stefanski will continue to get the question and maybe change his mind and maybe come to the point where, okay, like, I don't think you can just say you're done with Deshaun Watson. The salary cap hits the next 2 years are just too great. But could you say, okay, we're going to sit him down for 2 or 3 weeks, let him catch his breath, see if we can just change some things, and then we're not done with Watson, right? You have to be clear about your messaging. I think there's that chance. And I understood the question after the game yesterday, and I think it makes sense to ask that. And if he made that move right now, I would understand it because this is a pivotal point in the season. But they're not there, and I think you can point, if you're the Browns, you can say there's a million other issues. It's not all Watson to not make that move. But if Watson is the reason, let's say the next 2 weeks they're bad again and he's the clear-cut reason, I think then they can reexamine and maybe make that move.
Scott Petrak joining us. Scott, thank you, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll listen for you in Kevin's press conference at 12:30.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Scott joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I don't expect any major announcements from Kevin. I don't.
No way.
But the offense has been abysmal. They have scored, 13, 15, 16, 17, and 18 points in their five games. That's not good enough. We all know that. The changes have to happen on the offense. Whether they're changes that we will notice, whether they're subtle changes in scheme, in blocking, in the types of plays they're calling, whatever it is, there has to be some kind of a change. If you're looking for bigger stuff, Scott Petrak laid some things out for us. Scott from the Chronicle-Telegram was just with us on Baskin and Phelps. Here's what he had to say.
To me, there's three major moves you can make. One would be to change quarterbacks, which Kevin Stefanski said yesterday he's not going to do. One would be to fire offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey, just because for whatever reason the offense isn't working and he's a key part of the changes they made in the offseason. Or the last one would be for Kevin Stefanski to give up play calling. And I've never been an advocate of that. I think he does a good job. But if you're looking at 1-4 and as bad as it is, I think there needs to be one of those major changes. And, you know, it wouldn't stun me if Stefanski changed his mind and gave up the play calling, just because I feel like they need to do something. And personnel-wise, outside of quarterback, I just don't know what you could do.
Andy, I agree with Scott. I think you have to do one of those big three things. And I think the easiest one to do is for Kevin to give up play calling. Now, they're in the building. We're not in the building, as they say. So they know, is the scheme pretty good scheme? Are they calling good plays? Is it just not execution? What is it? And I would think if you're not going to change your quarterback, I agree with Scott. You either need to change the offensive coordinator or change the guy who's calling the plays. And I think Kevin's a good play caller, except 13, 15, 16, 17, 18 points, that's not enough to win in the National Football League.
No.
And after five games, we have a clear pattern here that needs to be changed.
Can I ask you this question? I'm just curious, because you said that's the easiest way to do it. If Deshaun Watson didn't have his contract, would moving him out be the easiest?
I don't know the answer to that. And I say that from this standpoint and this standpoint only. I'm not football savvy enough to look and see if my eyes tell me the quarterback's not playing very well. But is that because of the offensive scheme? Part of me thinks that they're just trying to put the square peg in the round hole. You know, I mean, they had an offense,
but it seems like they changed the peg by switching out coordinators.
Well, I would agree with that. Let me throw this at you. Last year on offense, this team averaged 336 yards per game. They're down about 100 yards a game right now. And they were 16th last year. They're now 32nd. They're dead last in yards per game. Last year, the team scored 23.3 points a game. Well, they're down 7.5 points a game. That's significant. They were 10th in scoring last year. Now you're 30th in scoring. I mean, that's significant. You can't roll the same thing out and expect it to work. Now, get better, coach better. Yeah, okay, I'm all for that, except we've been hearing that for like 3 or 4 weeks now. So whatever you're doing isn't working. It's probably time to do something a little more extreme. Do I think a change of quarterback would help? You know what? I do. I do. I would personally love to see Jameis Winston. I would love to see Jameis a quarterback for this team.
You've kind of said that since the beginning of the season, too. You felt that I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you felt like they had a quality backup, that if things weren't going the right direction, they'd be able to lean on him, right?
I don't know that things would be better with Jameis, but by golly, I see what's going on with Deshaun, and it's not very good. So I personally would love to see Jameis get a chance to play quarterback. That said, I don't know if Deshaun's the problem.
I don't know if he is either.
But I don't think he's been good.
I've seen a lot of wide receivers drop balls that they should have had that
absolutely
could have been touchdowns.
And I see him.
I've also seen some really ugly passes that you're like, how did that happen? And you're like, please tell me it got tipped. And you're like, eh, no.
And we see him, Andy, we see him holding onto the ball too long, too often. Okay, not all the time, but to me, too often. I would love to see a change at quarterback. Except here's the thing. That's not going to happen, I don't think. Because they're all in.
Yeah,
they are all in. And Andy, they have to be. I mean, you gave up draft picks galore, and you're paying him top dollar. You have to be all in on him. And you have to try to make this work. I think that's why Alex Van Pelt's not here anymore, and Ken Dorsey is. I mean, clearly the offense was better last year. Now, I know Deshaun was only there for five games of it, but clearly the offense was better even for him last year.
It's hard not to look at the offensive numbers from last year and say, look at this. I mean, you know, right out of the gate,
they were better last year.
350 total yards against the Bengals the first week of the season.
And that was with who at quarterback?
That was with Deshaun.
That's right.
And then the second week of the Steelers, 408. Right.
So they're cramming
341.
They're putting this different offense in that probably doesn't, well, it certainly hasn't meshed yet. Well, let's just leave it at that. It hasn't meshed yet. Who knows if it will. Brandon is in Elyria. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, Brandon.
Hello, how you guys doing?
Good.
Just a couple of things here. I don't know why Watson's playing.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
And terrible, we all agree. But I don't know why Stefanski isn't taking more of the blame. People talk about he's a great
player. All he did yesterday was take the blame. How many times in the post-game press conference, Jeff, did you hear him say, on the coaching staff, on me?
But he says that all the time.
Oh, I know, I agree. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I agree with that.
All the time. We got to be better. Why are we bringing in the last 2 weeks? Can someone help me? Why are we bringing in Jameis Winston on a 3rd-and-1 and a 4th-and-1? A 4th-and-1 to run a QB sneak? Why don't you keep your $230 million man on the field and run it? This isn't inches. 1 yard in the NFL is tough to get, let alone where everybody in the world knows Jameis is coming in to run a QB sneak. Didn't get that.
But then they pitched it out yesterday.
I didn't understand that. Why?
Because they didn't want a QB, because everyone believes that when he stands there, he's going forward with the ball. But that's been Kevin. It didn't matter him. He's done that with everybody, all these backup quarterbacks, right?
But it was 3rd-and-1 when he brought Jameis in yesterday, correct? Or was that a 4th-and-1?
I think it was 4th because they were 2 for 3 on 4th down. So, yeah, I think it was 4th. It was 4th.
And we're throwing that type of pass? I don't get it. The organization needs to be held accountable. What has Andrew Berry done? We didn't pick up any running backs. Yeah, it's misleading.
You did. You picked up Foreman. You did pick up Foreman.
And he admitted, and what did the coach say the very first game, Jeff, after the game? That's on me. I should have played Foreman more. I didn't.
They started him yesterday.
I don't understand it. We give Kareem Hunt away because whatever him and the coach got going on, he goes his first game with KC and averages 6 yards a carry. We don't run screens anymore. We don't roll out with Deshaun anymore. People want to blame Deshaun. It didn't matter if Peyton Manning or Brady was behind that. They're getting sacked as soon as he types the ball.
Can't argue with any of this.
Neither can we. I don't understand it. I wish the Haslams would come out and just say, you know what? Here's the deal. You're done calling plays. What's the point? I'm not big on Ken Dorsey myself. Why would you bring in someone to call plays and you're that stubborn that you don't give up the play calling? Something's got to change, guys. We're 1-4.
Brandon, I agree. I did think it was strange, Andy, that when you moved on from Alex Van Pelt and brought in another coordinator, and I think Kevin has done a really nice job since he's been here of calling plays.
Mm-hmm.
I was really surprised when they changed offensive coordinators that Kevin kept play calling duties. I thought that was a strange thing.
I'm sure that'll be a question in today's press conference.
I'm sure it will.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought that was strange. If you're changing offensive coordinators, maybe you should change more than that. But if Kevin's still calling the plays and it's not the type of offense maybe that he had in place because you wanted to change it up, maybe you should let the other guy call him because you changed it and you brought him in to run a different kind of offense. Chuck's in Shaker Heights. Chuck.
Hey, Chuck.
Hey, guys. That last caller took my thunder a little bit. But anyway. I was just thinking, do the team, or you think Stefanski give Deshaun Watson a chance to change the play at the line? I mean, most quarterbacks can do that.
Yeah,
I'm sure he does.
Yeah, yeah. Yesterday I saw him pointing. He was doing some audible.
You know, it's a whole lot of plays that Stefanski can run to slow that blitz down. You know, like I said, if your quarterback's going to drop back, and then take off running. Why not just call some quarterback draws or something, or some screen passes or something, or some screen to the tight ends? You got to slow the rush, the blitzing down, because all they're doing is pinning their ears back and coming in after your quarterback.
Chuck, that's a valid point.
There were
it?
Two tight ends on the line all the time yesterday. Like I kept watching. I was like, oh, look at this, two tight ends on the line.
You could say if the plays worked, the plays, you know, the play calling would have been fine. Well, the plays didn't work.
No, can we give Aiken credit for that touchdown catch?
That was fabulous.
That was a great catch.
That was fabulous. The defense has not been what it was last year.
It's the meh.
And that's part of the problem. I would think part of this might be the defense is on the field more than it was. That can't help.
It's possible.
The numbers clearly show the last year was significantly better. Yards per game is big. That's where the Browns were ranked number one last year in the NFL. That right now they're giving up about 55 yards more per game. Instead of being first, they're still 12th in yards allowed, Andy, so kind of middle of the pack.
They're meh. But they'd be above meh if they could just tackle.
Problem is their run defense is giving up 141 yards per game. And that's 25th in the NFL right now. And they're giving up 24.2 points a game. Well, your offense hasn't scored even 19 in a game. So if you're giving up 24.2 points a game, you're not going to win football games with this offense. And so I would love to say the defense is terrible. It's not. It's just not the dominant defense it was last year. Its tackling hasn't been good, as we've seen. And its defense against the run has not been good at all. And so you kind of have an ordinary defense right now, just kind of middle of the road. That's not good enough to win with this team. Not the way this offense is playing.
No, I was hoping Njoku was going to be able to help things out yesterday. That didn't work out that for everything we thought it would be. You're talking about more injuries. Denzel Ward, I can't wait to hear the injury update again. So, you know, that MRI machine, fire it back up, man, because – I don't know. Who had it today? Oh, it was Mary Kay that had it. They're talking about the players that have to get MRIs today. So it's Njoku, Ward on his hamstring, Delpit, head injury, Posick, knee again, Double O is just sick, Charlie Hewlett, rib, Rodney McLeod, face laceration. Ooh, that doesn't sound fun.
No. Jerry's in Cleveland. Jerry, Kevin Stefanski's press conference coming up in a couple minutes. Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. Okay, I'll make it quick. First off, I want to say that Stefanski can't make a quarterback change, only because I don't think that he got the power. I believe if it was his call, I believe he would change. That's just my opinion.
Jerry? Second, agreed. Agreed.
I want to say that the Browns defense, if you look at it since Stefanski has been here over the years, they've always gave up big plays, even when they was playing good lights out. They always, every game, it was some kind of miss. Communication, some kind of long run, some kind of long pass. That's that. When they signed Watson, what was it, 3 or 4 years? Whenever they signed him, it was a guy y'all had on y'all show that said Watson will never be that quarterback again that he was. I don't know who the guy was, but he was adamant. He said y'all will never see him being that quarterback. He said he won't even be close to it. And I remember that. And I got one question for you guys.
Sure.
Do y'all feel like Tony was having a good year? Do y'all feel like he's playing like he used his regular Cubs? I don't see it. And I just think that I don't think there's a Pro Bowler on that line right now. So it's just my opinion. Thank you, guys.
Jerry, thank you for the phone call.
I agree with the last line. There is no Pro Bowler on the line. That is correct.
I would agree with that. I've not watched Joel specifically enough to say whether he's been significantly dropped from his level of play. Menegan has watched more closely on the offensive line and is not the least bit happy with Joel Bitonio this year.
He's also got to do a little bit more work because look to the right, look to the left. Sometimes those
Posick's
guys aren't
been there most of the time, but Ethan has been out a couple of times.
No, Jed
the line has been a mess, guys. And it's not just injury, it's performance. It's not just injury. Other teams have injuries on the offensive line. Yeah. What do? You have to figure out how to make it work. I mean, you don't have a choice because what are you supposed to do, Andy? Well, we're injured on the offensive line. Okay, well, let's go to the draft next year.
Oh, boy, are we already doing that?
No, you have 12 games to play. Andy, you're only two games out of first place.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because you didn't bring that up yet. And I was going to bring that's the optimistic way to look at this thing.
Out of first place. And you've got every game in the division to play. You're two games out of first place. So
it's not, and you have to play every AFC North team this year. You haven't played one game.
Right.
Yet.
That's what you got to play them each twice.
Mm-hmm.
You're two games out. I know that sounds preposterous right now with what we've seen, but you're only two games out. So I don't want to hear about the injuries. Other teams have injuries. Fix it. Figure it out. Make it work. If you don't have the personnel, change the scheme.
I don't know I'm just curious to hear what he's going to say. I don't expect anything earth-shattering. I do expect we're going to play bingo on this one?
No.
You don't want to play, anybody want to play bingo?
I'm not in the mood for a fun game.
Let's be honest. When the Browns do something wrong, it's Dan's fault. Seriously.
Or Titus's,
let him have it.
Or Titus's fault.
I think it's Titus's fault.
It's always Titus's fault.
Let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We'll hear from the man who sits with me, and it's his fault on game day. He's Mr. Tyvus Powell. Hello, Tyvus.
First of all, y'all are insane. Y'all stop this Titus stuff. I got to hear it every Sunday. I don't need to hear it from you, too.
It's your evil cousin, man. That's what we're working. It's your evil brother.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Such a nice guy. Let's make Titus your alter ego.
Oh, wait a second. Hang on. The Bedford City School District is calling. They want the diploma back so they can spell your name right on there.
Mm-mm-mm.
Titus.
Yeah, we gonna get Dick from Dayton right. You know, one
we will.
He gonna get it right. I got faith in him.
That's funny. All right. So here's the deal. Kevin Stefanski opened his press conference. I know you're busy, so I'm sure you didn't hear it.
I didn't.
First question.
You know what he said.
Oh,
he says the same thing every time.
So. We have to coach better. We have to play better, and we'll get it fixed. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's fine. He was asked, ultimately, what's the call on Deshaun? And he said, ultimately, it's his decision on who starts at quarterback. And he was asked about ownership being involved, and he said, certainly, we talk about it with Tyvus's kids and Andrew Berry and with ownership.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any way that he can bench Deshaun Watson on his own without completely putting his own job in jeopardy. And I think your kids would agree.
Well, I mean, I think that's unfair, you know, because – you know, this is the guy that you paid this money to be successful and let him do his thing. And how can this guy won two times coach of the year doing it his way? And if it's not working, then it's not working. And I don't think it's fair to put his job at jeopardy, because if this thing fails, like ultimately blows up in their face, somebody got to pay for it. And usually it's the head coach. So I don't think it's fair that they're going to continue to march him out there, even though they know it's not working.
I don't. Little, Titus Jr. There sounds like it's all on the coach. I'm hearing it in the background.
Sorry, you're talking about my daughter.
Yeah. Male, female, it doesn't matter. Still Titus.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. Come on. Hey,
if
listen.
You never join this show again, Tyvus. I get it.
No, that's right. He's still got to work with us on Sundays, man. He's in trouble.
I'll see Andy every Sunday and be happy to see him no matter what.
What about me?
Well, we can talk about
depends,
that.
It depends on if we win the game.
Yeah, normally it's everything's blown over a week later. We're good. We're starting from scratch.
It is fun. If a game's not going well, Tyvus and I are sitting there, and Tyvus just say, oh, this is going to be fun. And he doesn't mean fun.
Hey, Tyvus, what was your take on the miscommunication play at the start of the second half? And I mean, I just don't know. I don't know how that happens. I watch entire college football seasons, entire high school football seasons, where you don't see that kind of miscommunication on a super important play where you may have elevated yourself back into the game after playing a very bad first half.
it doesn't make sense because, I said it in a post game show, like some of the things that they're doing, you could make the excuse for week one, maybe even week two, but we're talking about week five here. Like mm-hmm. at some point, like you should be clicking on all cylinders. And how long does it take, for us to see this new offense? Like, I get that it's new. I get that guys didn't play in the preseason. I get all of those things, but like, it's week five now. Like, at some point, like, that's not an excuse anymore, And the fact that, the offensive line is still struggling, I was wondering, when I was thinking about it today, I'm thinking, okay, it's a new offensive scheme. Maybe these guys on this offensive line, when they acquired these guys or they drafted these guys and they groomed these guys, they were all ready for running the ball and play action and things like that. And now that you switch it to more of a spread and more of a pass type thing, maybe those guys aren't used to that, And if it's going to continue to look like that, then I think you got to go back to what works. And, I know that you changed it because that's what Deshaun likes to do and all of those things, but you got to save the rest of the locker room in this whole situation. Like Deshaun can't tell me he's comfortable with getting sacked seven times or getting hit all these games and think that that's okay. Like, you won't make it half the season if you continue to do these things. So I think at some point, these guys got to look at this experiment and say, we're going to have to put this on the shelf. It's not working right now. And you got to find a way to inspire this team because, like, if they go out there and lose this Sunday, like, 1-5, it's like, all right, let's get our flights booked to Cancun, Like, it's pretty much done. So you got to find a way to win this locker room back, keep them inspired, keep them motivated. So something has to change. There's no way you're going to march that same team out there again this Sunday with no change and think that everything is just going to be fun and they're just going to be happy to be out there. That's not going to be the case.
I know that you've been working today and you didn't hear the beginning of our show. Now that you would listen, even if you weren't working, Andy and I said the same thing. Something has to change. Is it something you think visible from the offense, maybe a change of personnel in some way, shape, or form? Or is it more subtle stuff that maybe Andy and I and most football fans would never pick up, but a guy like you who played in the NFL would?
I mean, I think it has to be, it could be the play calling. It could be going back to the old scheme. It's multiple ways. But, the reason that I'm shocked by it all is because if I'm looking at this from a defensive player, no, outside of JOK, Corey Bojorquez, and Dustin Hopkins, we joke about it, but those are like literally the three bright spots in this overall Brown season. Those are the only three guys that look kind of how they looked last year, and they look the same this year. Obviously, I know Miles is Miles, and he's dealing with some injuries, so that's what's keeping him back. But outside of them four names, nobody looks like how they did last year. What changed in 1 year that you guys went from a physical, dominant football team that was inspired, didn't matter who was in there, we were going to play as hard as we can, we're going to take the fight to everybody, to this team that looked like they was done at halftime, that looked defeated at halftime? Like, what has happened in 1 year that y'all got like that? And I think that's the problem right there. They got to figure out what happened from last year to this year that they completely lost their entire identity as a football team. And it's glaring. And that's the part that's frustrating me because defensively, what's the inspiration defensively? Last year, you get some stops, you get the ball back, the offense at least is scoring, or they going down the field and they're going to put some type of points up on the board. This year, if you get the stop or not, I mean, I think they were, 1-17 on third down yesterday. So if that's the case, 1-13. If they was that on third down, like as a defensive player, okay, so we're going to get the stop. So what? We're going to be right back out there four plays. So like, what's the point? And I think that they get to a point where they're getting overworked. They're getting overused because they're not seeing their offense put the ball in the end zone. There's no benefit for them getting off the field, which means that they're starting to have these extended drives. Now guys are getting fatigued. Guys are getting in and out of the lineup. Guys are getting banged up and getting knocked out of the game. Like that, it's just a lot that's going on. And I think a lot of it can be fixed if that offense starts clicking.
Tyvus, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, about the whole being able to make a good tackle and that the team had worked about on it this week. But it's not – I think Tyvus learning how to tackle in practice isn't what it used to be, right? We were talking about the thud yesterday. And so can you explain that to folks about how can you get better at tackling during practice if you can't have that same kind of contact you used to 5, 10 years ago?
Well, I think that nowadays you have to – so you don't hit in practice. You thud. The ways you work on tackling in practice is they usually do like a tackling circuit. So when I was playing, we would have – obviously you get 2 days of practice before like Friday. Doesn't really count. That's like a fast Friday. Mm-hmm. So every Wednesday it would be like a padded practice because I think you get, 12 of them or something like that, 12 or 14 padded practices. So they was doing – you get pads on once a week. So every Wednesday you would have a tackling circuit. And in this tackling circuit, what it would look like is – you would demonstrate all of the tackles that you might see in the game. Now, you might do it on a dummy, you might do it on a popsicle, or you might do it on a player, on like a scout team player or something like that, to where you're just working on fitting it. Obviously, this is like a 50% type thing. You're not trying to kill each other in this, but you just want to get your body used to stepping and tackling, making sure you're going same shoulder, same foot. You're making sure that you're not giving up cutback lanes and things like that. You're working on angling tackling. You're working on strike zone tackling. You're working on hawk tackling, wrap and roll. That's where you wrap the guy, you roll your body. That's what you see that. You work on those type of things. All of the tackles that you might do in the game. And it's just like a 15-minute period where you go from – you got like 4 different stations that you go through and you own. And at each station, you work on one of those tackles I just told you about. So your mind is sharp. And as you're going through practice, you thud up. Now, it doesn't happen really in the secondary. Secondary, by the time the ball gets to you, those guys work on like punching at the ball and stripping the ball on a running back or something like that. But with linebackers and –
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
D-line, those guys really kind of work on fitting up runs and doing it right. And it's just a thud. When we say thud, that means you run, boom, you hit the guy, and you get out the way. You don't take him to the ground. You don't necessarily wrap up. It's just a boom just to make sure you fill in the contact, and then y'all get out the way, and the running back continues to run up the field and do all what he's supposed to do. But the reason that you do that, and, as a player, you get tired of doing it. And you don't want to do it as much. It's like, I want to save it for the game. But every time that I did that in practice, every time that I actually forced myself to do thuds in practice, it made me a much better tackler for when Sunday came around or in college when Saturday came around. So the mentality has to be, we can't brother-in-law each other. And then the one last thing I'm going to say is on scout team, we got to be better on scout team because the players emphasize that we look really good in practice. We're doing all the things that we're supposed to do in practice. It's not translate to the game. But I wonder with the scout team, with all the injuries, it could be times where those scout team players be like, hey, I'm not going to go that hard on you today. I know you're dealing with some stuff, so I'm going to just go about 75%. Well, I think that might be messing them up a little bit. Maybe we need better looks on the scout team to get these guys prepared for what they might see on Sundays. I know it sounds small and people are like, oh, you can't put this on the scout team, but it does matter. If you're getting a realistic look without trying to brother-in-law your teammate. So that's something I thought about as I was driving home yesterday.
I can't wait to hear what you think about driving in next Sunday because we'll hear it in the pregame show and then I'll hear it in the postgame show. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Tyvus.
See y'all next week.
And Tyvus Powell.
Tyvus, not Tyvus.
Oh, it's not Tyvus? Oh. Yeah. You got a whole city named after you in Florida.
There it is.
Titusville.
Tyvus, thank you. Bye. He's joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler.
Does Dick and Dayton do that every
Dodge
time?
Ram. Huh? Yeah, he does.
Every time?
Every time. And we've told him.
And he doesn't care.
No. Tyvus Powell had some very interesting thoughts. If you missed those thoughts, or Scott Petrax, or Brian Anderson, who's calling play-by-play for TBS today on Game 2.
The other Brian Anderson.
Guardians Tigers. Mm-hmm. Go back and listen to them on our website, 923thefan.com, or the Odyssey app. Something, as Tyva said, something needs to change. We said that at the beginning of the show, Andy. Something needs to change.
Well, if you listen to the press conference, nothing is changing.
If you listen to the press conference, nothing changed. Do you believe that?
Yes. I don't think they're going to change a thing.
You don't?
They're going to come back next week and say, okay, well, maybe we're healthier here in this position. I do not have a good feeling. If nothing changes at all going into next week, I don't know how you could have any confidence in this team.
Well, if they
are not a good football team.
If nothing changes and they don't win next week at 1-5,
it doesn't matter.
I don't want to say it's over, it's pretty darn close.
Mark your calendars.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, if they go back one and five
next week, I mean, I would think you're looking ahead the next year and the trade deadline and everything else.
So then the question becomes, okay, how quick can you trade Amari Cooper for a draft pick for next year? Are you thinking about trading Nick Chubb? You know, if he's okay and he's healthy after this 21-day period, and another team might want to pick him up. These are all things I do not want to happen. But I think if they give up on the season, they throw up the white flag, then, you know, hey, it's time to move forward.
I would agree with that. Jim is in Parma. Jim, welcome to the show.
Yeah, earlier in the program, you guys, I think, hit it right on the head. There is an old saying, I believe it's Jewish in origin, man plans, God laughs. Right now, God is laughing at the Browns' planning so hard, tears are coming out of his eyes. And that planning, I believe, goes all the way back to at least Baker Mayfield when they decided to get rid of him. And maybe even before, when they hired an owner whose resume consisted of a minor stock owner in the Pittsburgh Steelers. Somebody is doing the planning here, and let's be honest. If Deshaun Watson was on any other team, would he be the starting quarterback?
Under this contract, yes, he would. If the contract was the same,
under
he
the
was.
Contract.
And the other thing, too, just point of reference, because I think people know that I like Baker. Baker chose to leave.
But the Browns didn't have to.
No, they wanted to flirt with Watson, and so they did. So Watson said no.
Whose decision was that?
It was a team's decision to try to upgrade. Job every day, and whether their job every day is to try to upgrade at every position. That is what a front office is tasked to do. And if they felt that Deshaun Watson was going to be a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield, that was their decision. Now, they hopped into a party they probably didn't think they had any chance of being able to hang out at. And when Baker came back and said, hey, I'm gone, wrote the letter to the fans and said, see you later, when he really wasn't at that point, and Haslam wanted to talk to him and he didn't want to talk to Haslam, then we had problems. And he's like, get me out of here. So, and then, you know, Haslam's like, well, I don't care. At what expense is it going to cost for us to get him? Go get him. So I know it hasn't worked out, and I know it's been ugly, and it hasn't been the expectations that any one of us wanted. But in some ways, you kind of have to look at it and say, if this thing did work out, you have an owner that's willing to spend any amount of money to go out and get a player they think can help them win a Super Bowl. I guarantee you that Haslam's aren't excited about the fact that they're not winning. Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about what it just looks like a giant waste of money right now. That's all I'm saying, Jim.
Okay, if the money is available, okay, why did we go out and hire Ken Dorsey, who Buffalo was ecstatic to get rid of? Why did we go out and get Jerry Jeudy? We change our whole offensive thing. Kevin Stefanski, and I don't want to get rid of Kevin Stefanski. Believe me, I don't always agree with him. But if Kevin Stefanski's job was to put the best team on the field that we could field, and Deshaun Watson is our best quarterback at this point in time, we may be in a race with Carolina and the Jaguars to get the first draft pick.
April 24th, mark it. That's when the draft is.
Jim, thank you.
And Kevin's playing with the players that they give him. I mean, that is the one thing I'll hold true to every manager, every head coach. He can only put guys out there that the front office gives him.
And clearly, the front office ownership have given him a quarterback that he has to play. Billy's in Lakewood. Hi, Billy.
Hey, Billy.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, hey.
So, a couple things. I'm going to try to get through it quick. Jeff alluded to it earlier. We're in a situation, we can talk about X's and O's on the field all day long. We're in a situation because of Haslam. After he makes one, and I know you guys can't talk too much about this, so I'm going to do it for you. He makes one bonehead decision after another. And I'm not going to sit here and go through the last 7-8 years, but I do want to fast forward to what Kevin Stefanski said today in the press conference. And Jeff, I heard some other things that maybe you didn't mention. And he at one point said he makes the final decision. And then that reporter followed up with another question to, you know, really isolate it. And then he kind of danced around.
He said, I won't get into specifics. We clearly talked to Andrew and to ownership on big decisions. Is that what you're talking
correct.
About?
Yeah,
exactly. He didn't double down and say, I'm the final decision.
Correct.
He did circle back, though. He did circle back on who the starting quarterback was, didn't he? I thought he started, did. He said, I did, and then he said, I talked to those guys, and then he goes, but in the end, it's on me.
And Billy, like any employee, I mean, no employee has the final say.
No, but here's my biggest point is this. We're going down a scary path because Haslam is going to be stubborn. He's going to save face. He does not want to look like he made a $240 $240
million. Oh, I wish it was $240 bucks, man.
I wish too. So he's going to sit there and run this to the very end. I mean, he may run Haslam or he may run Watson all the way to game 10 to know for sure that he's crap. When we all know he's crap right now, and I don't mean to talk derogatory about him, but he's playing like crap. And if Haslam sits there and forces Stefanski to keep him in all the way to the end of the season, he's jeopardizing the whole season. He basically is sacrificing our season so he doesn't look bad. And then what he's going to do is he's going to blame it on Stefanski or he's going to blame it on Barry. And that's how it's
going to
go down.
So, Billy, someone is going to get blamed. You're right. Well, how many years? We've already now changed offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and special teams coordinator.
Pro Football Talk, our buddy Mike Florio's website, has a story out about Deshaun right now.
Oh, yeah?
At the current pace, Deshaun will be sacked 88 times this year.
Oh, that's down. It was 90 last week.
Which would be a new NFL record. And would be sacked for a loss of 524 yards, which would also be a new NFL record.
It's progress, though, because after last week it was 90.
Pro Football Talk says, and sorry, yes, offensive line, but getting sacked that often is on the quarterback, which I agree with. And if you look at Deshaun's,
gotta get rid of the ball fast.
If you look at Deshaun's career, he gets sacked a lot. So I think that's very telling.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.